It's time to bring together the roundtable on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
And the roundtable brought to you by Rosewood Grill in Hudson and Strongsville. See what everyone's talking about at rosewoodgrill.com. We were treated today. George Schindler came over with bags of lunch for us from the fantastic Rosewood Grill. So we did the killer French dip, and our roundtable members here, Doug Deacon, Jim Donovan from the Browns PNC Bank Radio Network, partook in those. Also, that's the French roll with the shaved prime beef and the melted cheese. And then we had sushi shots, which
I love those. Yeah, you get sushi grade ahi tuna in a little wonton cup, some sriracha, some soy sauce. That was good.
Deke still I did not do that. I have a career to protect.
but you did the sandwiches.
It's made the trade a little bit easier to take. Having a nice sandwich like that, Vic, I thought that was really nice.
Deke was born into that. By the way, George says the order is George and Kay, not Kay and George, when it comes to.
Well, maybe the food, but it had been a regular shot, it would have been Kay and George.
Nice. It is the roundtable, and we're here. You got to have some levity with this, folks. Come on. We're here to talk about the trade. Jim, I want to start with you in terms of its impact. Now, you ended your – well, before you completely ended your night last night, one of the last things you did was you went over to Atlantic Aviation here by Hopkins, and you were the farewell committee.
I was. Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden we went over there, and that's where we take off when we go on the road.
Yeah.
So I was well aware where we were going. I had my little parking lot sticker that we used to get in there.
And they let you in.
That got me through, and all of a sudden I see this plane pull up with the Indianapolis Colts horseshoe. Right on the tail. And I said, this must be Mr. Richardson's ride to Indianapolis. And then Trent showed up with about 12 of his closest friends and family, and off he went to Indianapolis. And I have to tell you, he looked still in a daze from what happened. But I have to tell you this, 6:20 last night, I'm getting ready to go on and do the sports on Channel 3, and that's when, you know, this memo or this email comes in that this trade has been made. And I have to tell you, my first reaction was, this is a gag. I mean, this is somebody trying to pull one over on us. This is Al Gore won Florida. I mean, that's what this is. And, I mean, you take a step back because you go, I can't believe I'm reading this.
That's how I felt.
You know, and off we went. It was an amazing night.
I was walking the dog when that came in, by the way, and the poor dog, because I yanked the chair, I started sprinting back in, and he's looking at me like, what is your problem, man? And it took me by surprise as much as anyone. How about you, Deke?
Well, I was sitting at home, and my son called me and said, hey, did you see the Browns just traded Trent Richardson? I said, oh, come on, you're kidding me. And he said, no. And then I checked my emails, and I saw I had one that said that. So it was one of those... interesting nights, to say the least.
So interesting, shocking, whatever, surprising. My take has been surprised but not shocked, because the more you look at what this is parting ways with a running back around whom this offense is not built and was never going to be built, and most offenses aren't built around backs in this league. It's about the quarterback, and it's about, frankly, giving this team the ammunition, the ability to get that guy, right? I mean, if you let it all sink in, this is about 2014 draft and having the ability to get one of what is supposedly a very good quarterbacks from that draft.
Well, I think that there's a lot of visual problems with everybody letting the trade soak in. I mean, if you pick up a pocket schedule for the Cleveland Browns of what the games, when the games are, and who they're playing this year, right on the front jacket of it is Trent Richardson. If you watch a television advertisement, and it's for the Browns to buy season tickets to a division rival game, a three-pack, or whatever the particular feature is, it's a Trent Richardson run that you're looking at. The visual part of the trade that's so difficult right now is that they've got Trent Richardson. He'll play for them probably on Sunday, you would think, and he'll be in a Colts uniform. And right now, we don't have a body in place.
Nothing.
And that's the tough thing. I mean, the tough thing is that for this thing to materialize and for us to really weigh the checks and balances of it, we have to wait until this draft comes up in May.
And I think I think you hit it exactly on the head. That's what the fans of the Cleveland Browns, they feel like they've been waiting and waiting. And now it says, here, we'll take, you know, the most recognizable face of the franchise.
Right. And here's the here's the other thing, Nathan, too, is that I think that the fans, and deservedly so, guys, I think that they're a little tired of hearing that this guy wasn't the fit for this offense, that Brandon Whedon didn't fit the Pat Shurmur offense last year. So, you know, we got to get some people finally that fit everything. And I guess you got to achieve that. And that's what happens when you change staffs and you change regimes. So I think that's the other difficult part of it is it's frustration because we don't have any payoff on this thing yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Waiting till 2014, Doug, for a lot of us is a difficult thing to do. But when I look around the league and see what's working, see what's successful, I always say I want that for us. And that isn't here. I mean, I don't know where it's going to come from if you don't see a way to get there or a way to acquire it. This right now, this is the best way I can see. But tell me that there might be something else that I'm missing.
Well, I don't. I'll just go back a little bit into the history part of it. You know, I remember when the Browns traded Paul Warfield and they got the first round draft pick, third overall from Miami, and they used it on Mike Phipps. Oof. Well, Mike Phipps was a flop, so yep. You know, it becomes in the drafting. But they traded Mike Phipps to the Bears for a first round draft pick, and that became Ozzie Newsome.
Oh.
So you know, sometimes it you know, things aren't popular, but it's what you do with what you got, and I think that's very important. You can see the pros and cons of Trent. I mean, the cons were, you know, he danced in the backfield. He didn't hit a lot of home runs. But, you know, the other side of it is, you know, we didn't really run him outside a lot. We're down a couple guards. And so, you know, you don't know what the whole thing is. And the other part is, you know, I think, you know, although he didn't have a full or a true fullback at Alabama, you know, you look at Adrian Peterson, he's got a Felton. You look at, Ray Rice, he's got a Leach. So you don't know how he would have fit if that was in. But, you know, with that said, you know, we were sitting up in the booth many times, and we were just frustrated when he would dance in the thing. And I think, you know, yeah. When he came in, there was a little prima donna that was handed to him that, you know, kind of makes it tough for everybody.
I was so excited when they got him. Because I thought he was going to be an incredible player, and I thought that he would control games, you know, late in the ball game, if they could eke out a lead, and it became his time in the game to just control the clock, control the yards, the yard markers, the chains, get first downs. Very rarely did that happen last year. They, you know, they weren't in that position. So I came into this year anticipating, you know, 300 carries, 60 catches. Those were the numbers we were all throwing around. But I have to tell you guys, I really believe that a lot of the green light, to green light this trade, I think there was an awful lot of pressure on that opening game against Miami. I mean, I think that you kind of sense it was going to be tough in Baltimore.
Yeah.
But before we went in, I think we all realized how important that game was against Miami. And who had bad games in that game? Richardson had an invisible game, and Whedon had a horrible game.
I think you're right. Yeah, we talked about it. It was probably one of the biggest opening games. I remember you wrote the column on ClevelandBrowns.com. You said it's only a game, but...
And there was the enormous pressure that hung there. But here, you know what's leaving me sort of empty feeling here?
Those sushi shots?
No, those are leaving me full.
Those are
good. I'll take more of those.
In fact, we're looking for more, and I think we have some more outside, and we'll get them in the next break. But here's the thing from Rosewood Grill, by the way, in Hudson and Strongsville, which sponsors this roundtable. I keep thinking that Richardson's, what we've seen of him on the field, is far outweighed by the aura of third overall pick of the draft. Mm-hmm. That what he came in, I'm with you.
Yeah,
the day
yeah,
he comes
yeah.
in as third overall pick, I'm envisioning you. There's no stopping this
Adrian
guy.
Peterson.
This is
yeah.
this is the. It, yeah. He'll be better than
right.
Peterson. I said third overall pick, running back. They've got to see something incredible here. And all we've really had from that day till now is that and the it is far overshadowed what he has produced. For third overall pick, you've got to be seeing production that just leaves you saying, this is you'll never be able to stop this guy. And I hate to use the quote that became a cliche in this, but Jim Brown used that word ordinary. You kind of get that feeling of that. You kind of get that sense that extraordinary is what I needed to see. I think he was better than ordinary, certainly, but he wasn't extraordinary, or at least hasn't through 17 games. I haven't seen enough extraordinary.
I think one of the things that's tough is I thought he played with a lot of courage in his rookie year, playing through injuries, behind an offensive line
that still wasn't
a great run-blocking offensive line, although it was a very good pass-blocking line. And you thought, you know, he dropped the weight in the offseason. You'd see more bursts. He was going to be quicker, more explosive. There certainly were some plays in the preseason that looked that way. And then you get to the regular season, not a single run of more than 10 yards on his 30 carries. One of his receptions, same type of a thing. And so I think that you're right. I think he can be on a good football team, a great fourth quarter clock killer.
Right.
I think on a team, though, that needs a running back to produce chunk plays on his own, he's not that kind of back. And I think the determination was made that when you look at the teams that are winning Super Bowls, you look at the teams that are good, very few of them are doing it because of a running back.
See, and Nathan, too, is that the entire offseason was consumed by, number one, that he had that lower leg problem, that shin problem that kept him off the field on the sideline during all the OTAs and the minicamps. Then he got into camp, and the whole preseason was predicated on this, quote, the plan to have him 100% for the Miami game. And we all held our breath that day when he got decked by Ndamukong Suh in the second preseason game against the Lions when he first got in there. There was so much preparation to just get him on the field okay, but there wasn't the payoff. Now, whether it was game plan oriented or what we're saying here, that maybe he just wasn't that kind of back, that's the interesting part of the equation.
Well, I think the other two backs that were drafted in that class, you know, the one in Washington and the one down in
Tampa, the kid Morris.
Doug Martin.
Yeah, I mean, that all of a sudden you're sitting there and you look at their numbers and you're saying, okay, this is the third overall. Are we getting third overall value?
Well, that's what Vic was saying.
And I think that's the point. That's, I mean,
that stuck with me. But when I say that, here's what I respect, though, about the kid. Having a conversation with him, fairly extensive one before that home opener, you know, he's talking about drop the weight. He had dropped like 10, 12 pounds He was 236, 237 last year. All right, I could see that. He wants to be lighter. He wants to be faster, more explosive. Said he's eating right, changed his habits. Changing his mindset of putting too much pressure on himself, saying that if things went badly for him in a game, if he didn't get the first down, he says, I'm worried about my kids not, you know, having the lifestyle that I want them to have and not the one I had as a kid. And mine was, you know, crazy growing up in a house with a lot of kids and a mom working a couple of jobs, and it was a tough run. His mom is a cancer survivor. I mean, there's so many things that were admirable about his what he sought for himself, but what he – and I also felt he wanted to do it for the team. He wanted to bring something special here to Cleveland, all of those things, but it became much more conversation than reality. And I thought that for a guy who was this third overall pick, I'm hearing too many discussions of what you have to fix. He said about being on time for meetings and things like this. I don't know if those were distractions or what, but you know, your mind is pretty free when I think you can just perform.
I think this is going to work out well for him, to be perfectly honest. He's no longer the third overall pick of his team. He's, you know, a theoretical pick in 2014, which if he does well and they do well, will be, you know, a late pick in the first round. And he's going to be playing on an offense where teams are certainly more worried about Andrew Luck, Reggie Wayne, T.Y. Hilton, and Darius Hayward-Bey than defenses were against the Browns. So I think it's going to work out for Trent Richardson. And hopefully it works out for the Browns. Did he work in this offense at this time? No. I mean, the numbers weren't spectacular. You look at it. Guys like Sean Green, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, Michael Turner, who really couldn't move last year, had more runs of over 15 yards than Trent Richardson did last year on similar carries. So it didn't work out here. I hope it does work out for him because I think he is a tough kid and I think he wants to be good. But for the Browns, I don't think it wasn't working, and they thought they could get an asset in a first-round pick that they think can mold the team the way they want to mold it.
Well, let me just ask you one final thing on him if you're ready to move on. But I wonder about his vision sometimes. Did he see the runs? You know, and I remember
that.
I remember that epic play down in Dallas where he absolutely missed the spot where they wanted to go, and he totally missed it, and he ad-libbed his way out of it. There was a huge hole across from the ball game that day, and I'm wondering if there were other episodes where he just didn't see it, and he just, you know, he relied on his power to take the pile and move it a yard, whereas there might have been 8 yards if he had gone to the right spot. So, I mean, technically speaking, you know, you wonder if he hit the right spot. You know, sometimes it's easy to blame the offensive line, but if they were doing their thing, but he just wasn't going to the right spot, that's a problem too.
Well, I think the NFL is also a one-cut running game.
Yes.
You know, and if you try to maneuver. And I mean, once they get you to stop your feet, then you're dead. And when you're jumping around like
right.
that, sometimes you are.
Right.
But with that said, you know, how many stretch plays did we really run? You know, did we? I don't think we ever got into that because that wasn't part of the last offense.
Sure.
The last offense wasn't an outside running game. So there's a lot of questions that are unanswered. But you know, and you know, we're at the point now. The answers are going to be in Indianapolis, not here, that we find out.
Yeah. Right.
Roundtable: Jim Donovan, Doug Deacon, Cleveland Browns. PNC Bank Radio Network. They'll be on the call for Sunday's game. There is a game Sunday, guys.
There is.
Browns playing against Minnesota.
Yeah. I'm heading to Office Max right after I leave here to get some whiteout for my lineup card.
Your lineup card?
Yeah. I'm going to be moving. Going to be moving guys in and out. Yeah. And how do you spell McGahee?
And you're going to be talking about a quarterback named yeah. Brian Hoyer. We got to talk about this as much as we can here in the time we have left. But Brian Hoyer starting at quarterback, and the surprise, only surprise there being that, because, I mean, Brandon Whedon's hurt, but surprised that it wasn't Jason Campbell. Are you accepting the idea that this is a quicker decision-making guy, quicker ball out of the hand guy behind a line that doesn't give quarterbacks time to do a lot of thinking and pausing?
Yeah, I think so, Vic, and so much for the theory that fourth preseason games don't mean anything, because I think that fourth preseason game for Brian Hoyer and how he performed and who he performed with in Chicago, I think convinced that coaching staff that the ball came out. It came out on time, very much on time, to the right spot, and in a good spot to get it. I have to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed watching him play in that game. And I mean, normally we're just looking at the clock, you know, in the fourth preseason game to see when we're going to get out of there. Well, actually, let me amend that. You're looking at the clock, Doug, to see when that's going to end.
But, you know, Brian, you know, he's one of those guys that anticipates where the receiver is going to be. And he doesn't have the arm of a
right.
Brandon Whedon or a Jason Campbell. But by anticipation, then the ball is there when the receiver gets out of his cut. And I think, you know, he also has a little more mobility, which could help shore up your protection, you know, because that's been a major problem in the first two games. It's a, you know, great opportunity for him. You know, he's been around Tom Brady, and you know, when you're around Tom Brady, you know, Shea's, you know, always talks about it. You know, Brady isn't, you know, he might look like a laid back, cool guy, but he is one intense competitor. You know,
right.
You see that with the great quarterbacks; they are intense competitors. And there's just some things you learn from people being associated with people like that that have to be, you know, have a carryover effect that, you know, elevates your game.
Yeah, I think this is. For other players on this team, I can't imagine what's in that locker room right now. The sense of, I mean, think about the players, what's going through their mind. There's the shock.
I don't think anybody could feel safe if Trent Richardson just got traded out here. I don't think anybody could say.
That's a very valid point.
I mean, that's this urgency, this sense of just that sense that you're accountable and that everybody is on notice, that right, that nobody is safe. That's one thing. But I think the other thing is just trying to adjust and get together for today's another critical day of preparation for a game. And you've got to deal with that. You've got a new quarterback who's leading your team, and the guy that you started out as a third stringer is now the starter. So how quickly can you develop any belief in him? You're watching him on the practice field. How does he look? Nathan, that's got to be a weird place right now.
It's got to be a very weird place, a very strange place, because I think on one level where you thought, okay, Josh Gordon's coming back in week three. We finally have Whedon, Gordon, and Richardson together in the offense. It's supposed to suit them the best with Norv Turner. And those guys are never going to play together. It's not going to happen. That will not happen in the year 2013. So it's got to be tough. It's got to be strange, because even when we looked at this game originally, we said, you know, week one's important. You want to get that win. Going to Baltimore is going to be tough. But, you know, week three at Minnesota, that's a winnable game for the Cleveland Browns. The defense matches up with what they do well in offense, which is running the football. They don't really have the weapons in the passing game or the quarterback there either. And you thought that it was a winnable game, and now you just wonder, are they focused on the game? How are they going to come out? A new quarterback, a new running back, a new wide receiver? And we're in week three of the season, so it's got to be strange.
And you go back to Brian, you know, I go back to the last game last year when Thaddeus Lewis played.
Right.
And Thaddeus was a very smart quarterback.
Yeah.
You saw that ball come out in a hurry, ball was where it was supposed to be, and there was no protection problems against the Steelers.
Right. He was decisive, and that's what this is all about, is decisive, quick release. And what are we going to see? We're going to see, I think, a lot of slant routes. We're going to see a lot of crossing patterns. We're going to see players – the hope would be, catch the ball and then pick up yards after the catch, because this is not going to be a deep throwing attack.
Yeah, Vic, that's not what Hoyer does. Last night we had Brian's high school coach, Chuck Kyle, on the news over at Channel 3 at 7 o'clock, and he wrapped up the interview by saying, I'm going to tell you, someday Brian Hoyer is going to be a great, great offensive coordinator. And I said, well, that's great, but Sunday we really need him to be a quarterback. He's got to be a coordinator wearing a helmet on
Sunday. Sounds like he was describing Jason Garrett.
We looked at
the stats, time in the pocket for the three Browns quarterbacks in the preseason, and you know, Hoyer got it out at 2.5 seconds to attempt. Campbell's about 2.73, a little bit higher, and more than 50% of Hoyer's passes got out in 2.5 seconds or left. 67% of Campbell's were 2.6 seconds or more, so I think that has a lot to do with it. His ability to go up there, read the defense pre-snap, know where he's going to go with the ball, get it out
quickly.
As long
as it's going to the right guy.
Right.
You got to hope, listen.
But the other part of that is, you know, the receivers have to get off the line of scrimmage and get away from the jam, because we've been having little log jams out there, you know, with guys not getting off.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned the receivers. That's right. Another lineup change for this game with Greg Little being demoted.
I think that was deserved.
Yeah.
I think you got to agree.
He's probably in a better role. I think this takes pressure off him.
Oh,
he couldn't handle being the number one guy.
I don't think he handled it in his rookie year.
Not at all.
He's not a number one guy.
Right. No.
Yeah.
But we talked about that. That's the domino effect where, you know, all of a sudden, if you are the number one guy, you get the number one corner.
Right.
You don't get that hot shot. You get the second best.
And Josh Gordon coming back, like you said, should help open those things up. But, you know, I charted the 70 most targeted receivers in the NFL over the first two games. Greg Little's averaging 2.7 yards per target, by far the worst in the league. Wow. So he really struggled, caught about a third of his passes. And I think he's a guy that ultimately belongs on a high-powered throwing offense in the slots, where he can be physical a la Anquan Boldin.
He's a third receiver on many good teams. A third receiver.
A physical guy in the slot.
Yeah.
He might be a running back on Sunday.
And you never know. He goes back to his running back background. Guys, thank you. Jim Donovan and Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. They will be on the call for Sunday's game between the Browns and the Vikings. This is the Roundtable. It's brought to you by Rosewood Grill in Hudson and Strongsville. See what everyone's talking about at rosewoodgrill.com. Yes, we sampled the French. It's called the Killer French Dip.
And it was.
And the sushi shots from Rosewood
Grill.
That's
a tough one.
And look, the place, the menu, everything is there, is made from scratch, real world prices. So you ask yourself when you're at Rosewood, why would you ever eat at a chain restaurant? And I'm not going to. I'm going to go there tonight and have dinner there,
Hudson,
too. We had lunch in the studio today with our two buddies, you. And
hopefully nobody will be traded while you're on your drive out there.
That's the other thing. If I'm there, and I hope, George, I hope they got the good Wi-Fi, because I got to have that thing handy so I can,
I don't think
they're done yet. There might be more coming up. So, all right, we've got much more coming up for you in hour number two. You'll hear from Gerard Cherry, Mark Craig from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, callers, 216-578-0850. Lots more ahead. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.